Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
You heard Mark talking about it. The Pensacola Police, Pensacola Police Department chief search has taken a dramatic and surprising turn. I don't know how else to describe it exactly. You know, I'm pretty close with a lot of these folks, and I don't live in the city, but I take PPD pretty close to heart. Probably the local agency I'm most invested in. You know what it actually goes back to is I was in Leadership Pensacola with Tommy Leiter when he was the assistant chief, and just kind of over time, that relationship and relationship with lots of other members of the force kind of grew and changed. And, you know, had it not been for that, we probably wouldn't have, I don't know, with Chief Simmons at the time. And just, I think it's funny because you think about how things work out over time. But as you well know, if you listen to the show, I'm fairly pro law enforcement and certainly pro local law enforcement. And we've been seeing this history of this whole story has been very convoluted. Chief Chrisman, current acting Chief Chrisman, who at one time was the SWAT commander and then moved up to be captain and then, you know, was selected from a nationwide search to be the police chief last year. Okay, about a year ago. And then Tommy left because Chief Leiter left to go work for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office when his very, very good and longtime friend and former Pensacola police chief, Chip Simmons, got elected sheriff. So he left a little bit ahead of schedule. He was going to be a couple more years in the drop program, and then he was going to leave, but he left early. And we just assumed that Chief Chrisman, since he'd been selected through a nationwide search, would be the guy. You know, that's really kind of what we expected. And then the mayor announced that he was instead going to go back to the well and do a nationwide search, and nobody understood this decision. Nobody understood it. We thought, look, you already did this. It's going to be expensive. The Fraternal Order of Police, the union doesn't want it. The force doesn't want it. I don't know any citizens who were clamoring for it. Basically, Grover had this idea like he was going to go search for the next chief of police. And his explanation was, well, we thought that Kevin would have a little bit more time, that Chief Chrisman would have a little bit more time in training before he put him in that role. But again, nobody really understood this. And at every point, because Chrisman is clearly capable, qualified, runs the force well, is well-beloved and respected, and, you know, all the good stuff, okay? And so as we went through the selection process, at every stage, he made the cut. Not surprising. And then we got word yesterday afternoon. I actually saw it late at night. I'd been at Leadership Pensacola, or Leadership Santa Rosa all day, and then I fell asleep for a couple of hours, and then I woke up, I looked at my email, and I just started swearing. Just, I'll be honest, I was like, you've got to be kidding. So we got Booker, Hodges, John Ortolano, and Eric Randall are now the three finalists. Now, I still think there is a chance that after the public complains about these choices, that the mayor might say, well, you know, maybe we want to now, hopefully, okay? And I know the people who are involved in the selection process. I mean, Keith Wilkins, city administrator, good guy. Okay, I don't know Kareth Fiddler so well. I know him a little bit. I don't know Ted Kirchhardt at all. He's the HR director, and Kareth is the deputy administrator. But I know Jenny Craner. She's fabulous. Really good people, okay? And city attorney Susan Wolf, I know her fairly well, okay? Very good person, good at her job. I respect them, which makes me wonder whether they made the choice or whether somebody's thumb was on this scale. Because I don't know the answer. It wasn't done in the sunshine, which it doesn't have to be. It's an administrative decision. But this is an outcome I had hoped not to be the case. You got three people, none of whom are from the South. That's a concern. Okay, it doesn't mean you couldn't do. But I'm not from the South, and I think I understand the area fairly well. But you're competing against somebody who is from the South, who's worked at this force his whole career, knows everybody, is known, knows the neighborhood, knows the territory, and there's not a problem to be fixed. Like, what is the problem that bringing in an outside person is going to fix at PPD? There isn't one. They're on the cutting edge of everything. You find out that, you know, nationally we're going to try some new thing. We're already doing it. We're already doing the body cameras. You know, we're already doing the drones. We're already doing the tracking of racial data in police stops. We've already banned chokeholds. You know, it's like everything you want, they already do. And if they don't already do it, they're willing to adapt pretty quickly as responding to the Citizens Police Advisory Committee. So you got somebody from New Mexico, somebody from Virginia, and somebody from Minnesota. Really? And, God, I really hate to say this. I wish I didn't have to. But you got two black guys and a Hispanic guy. Now, that could happen. They could be the most qualified out of candidates, certainly. But was there an intent to find somebody that was a racial minority? How much did that factor into it? Was that even a consideration? I don't know, because it's a, you know, done in private, right? And are you really telling me that Kevin Christman didn't measure up against the assistant police chief at the Newport News, that's a comparable size city, a little larger than we are? I just have a hard time believing it, honestly. So I'm worried. I'm worried about what this means for morale in the force. I'm worried about what this means for Kevin Christman, who is a pro. I mean, I'm sure his answer to all this is going to be, you know, look, it's not my decision to make. I'm going to keep doing my job. Y'all keep doing your jobs. You know, let's just keep doing what we're supposed to be doing, protecting the people in the city that we love. You know, that's not going to be an issue. I don't understand this decision. And we have a history in Escambia County of bringing in outside experts who look great even in person, and then it doesn't turn out. So I'm frustrated, and I feel pretty comfortable guessing that a lot of folks at PPD are frustrated seeing this news yesterday for a decision we don't understand, for a decision that doesn't make sense. Again, what's the problem you're trying to fix? You know, what's the thing that PPD is not doing? And by the way, I don't know whether the minority status factored into the decision, but I'm sure that's what people will think. And if they think that, especially after this was a decision made after the Black Lives Matter protest last year and the Citizens Police Advisory Committee last year, and all, it's hard. You know, I understand why people would form that conclusion. And that's a problem, too, if they believe that. So whoever he is, even if he's great, is going to come in with handicaps of perception. 716 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives. I'm 22 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm getting some texts in on this issue of the police chief. Somebody says, for heaven's sake, given the news headlines, nobody from Minnesota. I understand. Somebody here says, you can bet it was part of the decision. Our city's as good old boy as the county. I've lived in this area for 54 years. I've seen it before. Somebody says about the decision to exclude Kevin Christman from the PPD finalist for the chief position. This is the kind of ridiculous and ill-advised decision that a mayor who doesn't need to worry about re-election would make. And somebody here says, look back to the Tamar Crawford shooting. Who was the mayor walking the streets with? Commissioner May. That should tell you what's influencing this decision and the mayor's view of law enforcement. I don't know whether that's true exactly, but it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain this decision. It should be Kevin Christman's job to lose, frankly. And I don't think he's done anything to lose that job. 7:23, Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Another mass shooting in America, this time in Indiana, where 8 people were gunned down overnight at a FedEx facility near the Indianapolis airport.
I can't believe it. You know, I'm going to work, get some money. I don't know why they bring guns to work. Or why would there be an argument so bad that we get to shoot?
Authorities say the gunman took his own life. They haven't said yet whether he was an employee. Former Vice President Mike Pence recovering after having a pacemaker implanted. His office says he had a slow heart rate, but will return to activities in the coming days. Got any problem with heights?
No, not me personally. My wife hates them, though.
Do you enjoy an infinity pool?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
How about an infinity pool on a rooftop over 964 feet up?
Love it.
Dubai skyscraper, the place for you. The Address Beach Resort has been awarded 2 Guinness World Records this week, including one for the highest outdoor infinity pool in a building on the resort's rooftop, just over 964 feet up. Also got the record for having the highest occupiable skybridge floor at more than 965 feet high.
Just one thing, when you throw me the little squishy ball, don't throw it too far.
Mark, thanks
for the update. We've got Dave Greenwood on the line. He is the Pensacola Beach Safety Chief for Escambia County. Hey, Dave, welcome back to the show. How are the beaches looking today?
Well, it's kind of overcast. We've got a wind steady out of the north right now. So it is flat and calm out here, though. But, however, we've got a little bit of a swell rolling in, so it might be could be a yellow flag today. We'll look at it in another couple hours once, but right now it's as flat as a pancake with this north wind blowing.
Hey, you know, it's kind of funny. You'll appreciate this. My boys actually prefer yellow flags, but Dad is like, okay, but I got to go out with you, obviously. They like the action of the surf, but so right somewhere between green and yellow is what we're expecting today and maybe through the weekend?
Yeah, through the weekend. After we talked last Friday, later on in the afternoon, we put up the red flag because the surf really picked up, and then we had the red flag out on Saturday. Kept everybody out of the water. We had a group of 10 training lifeguards, and it was really good to get them in to give them heavy surf experience. Then Sunday, like you say, the yellow flag, everybody goes in on the yellow flag, and we had to rescue probably over half a dozen people that on Sunday when we had the yellow flag flying.
Yeah, you know your limits. The Gulf is not a pool, and pay attention to the guards, and, you know, don't do dumb stuff. And we are so glad that your guards are out there. Are you, hey, just a quick thing. Are you fully staffed, or are you short staffed? Because I know it seems like everybody's short staffed right now, but are you guys, you have as many guards as you need?
Well, yes and no. I mean, in what context of the question do you mean are we fully staffed? We're done hiring, and we have approximately 73 lifeguards. However, out of that 73, I've got one who's leaving for the Air Force Academy in June. And anyway, he's off at university right now. But so a lot of them are in school because probably 95% of our lifeguards are students.
Yeah.
And, but once, I mean, we're well-staffed on the weekends, and we do increase our staffing. We're going to branch out next weekend to open up our outer beaches, Park East, Park West, and Quietwater. We'll have lifeguards posted out there. But it's just a seasonal student nature of the business. And what we do is we start off slow, and then as we get closer into summer, we ramp up. And majority of our staff, pretty much all of our staff, will be available once school's out towards the end of May.
Excellent. Well, Dave Greenwood, he is a Pensacola Beach Safety Chief for Escambia County. Dave, you know, as always, I appreciate the work you do keeping our folks safe, locals and visitors, and appreciate what your guards do on a regular basis. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Have a wonderful week, and I look forward to next week, Andrew.
You too. Davis Allen now, traffic for you. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. We just got about a minute here before the bottom of the hour, but Ellison Bennett is on the line. Ellison, welcome back. What's on your mind this morning, sir?
News Radio 92.3.
Hey, you got to turn off your radio, brother. That's going to get in the way. Are you there, Ellison?
Good morning, sir.
That's a bummer. Okay. 720. Yeah. By the way, always turn off your radio. If you ever call, don't turn it down. Just turn it off and listen on the phone. That's just general good advice. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, this is kind of an odd story. You remember the Ever Given, that enormous container ship that got wedged sideways in the Suez Canal and was blocking it for all that time? They seized it. They took it. The Egyptians have seized it. And they're saying that this is going to start to cover some of the costs of the lost revenue and the salvage of the ship. Because it's like a Japanese ship that's flagged out of Panama or something. It's some crazy chain of who owns the thing. So they just seized it and said, you're going to owe us. We're going to take this ship and we're going to pursue other means. What kind of assets does Skanska have locally? I'm just kidding. Mostly just kidding. Mark Jacobs is up next.
Monday morning feels so bad. Everybody seems to nag me. Coming Tuesday, I feel better. Even my own man looks good. Wednesday just don't go. Thursday goes too slow. I'll have Friday on my mind.
Some people will say we're packing the court. We're not packing it. We're unpacking it. Senator McConnell and the Republicans packed the court over the last couple of years, as Senator Markey outlined. So this is a reaction to that. It's a necessary step in the evolution of the court, and I'm proud to co-sponsor it.
No, it's not a necessary step in the evolution of the court. It is perhaps the single most dangerous threat to the rule of law in our country that anybody has proposed in my lifetime. And I don't exaggerate. I am genuinely concerned about this. The only good note is that Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, says she's not going to bring this bill to the floor. And, Joe Biden has put together a commission of people to study the question of what to do with the court. What Nadler wants to do, and others, is they want to actually increase the number of Supreme Court justices to 13. They want to pack the court. There's just no way to overstate how bad of an idea this is. Oh, not because it means the court would swing liberal. That's not the issue. The issue is respect for the court itself. Now, Stephen Breyer, who is, he would not prefer to be called a liberal justice, but I'm going to call him that anyway because that's what everybody would say about his rulings. If there's a liberal on the Supreme Court, he's it. Okay? Brilliant man, great jurist. I disagree with him often, but a brilliant, hilarious, wonderful man. No doubt. Okay? Very good friends with Antonin Scalia, by the way. You should be able to be friends with people you disagree with. Okay. He gave the Scalia lecture recently, at which the Scalia family, several of them were present at Harvard. Wonderful 2-hour lecture. You ought to watch it. It's fantastic. What does he say in the court of that?
But the court packing story is relevant here for another reason. Proposals have been recently made to increase the number of Supreme Court justices. I'm certain that others will discuss related political arguments, for example, will what goes around come around? Are the nomination and confirmation processes working well? Do appointments too closely reflect partisan political division? Has the court itself become politically partisan? This lecture reflects my own effort, however, to be certain that those who are going to debate these questions and related proposals also consider an important institutional point. Consider it. Namely, how would court packing reflect and affect the rule of law itself?
This is a warning to all of the would-be court reformers and court packers. The Supreme Court members don't talk a lot in public. They just don't. They speak through their opinions and through the oral arguments. When they go out of their way to give a lecture on why court packing is a terrible idea, pay attention. And by the way, this is not being given by a conservative member of the court, right? What he says in the course of all this is we have a long history of the Supreme Court working very, very hard under very challenging circumstances to get to the point where people take it seriously. See, you take it for granted, maybe, that the Supreme Court is the law of the land, that the Supreme Court has the final say, that the Supreme Court can declare a statute or a rule or a law constitutional or unconstitutional. It was not always this way. Going all the way back to Marbury versus Madison, where they had to get themselves out of an incredibly tricky political dilemma and in the process do so while raising their own power to do what the constitutional framers intended. And it has been a long process of them issuing rulings that got ignored by governors or presidents, by threats to pack the court before under FDR that they caved to. But there has been a long, slow, steady process of the Supreme Court getting to the place where we take their judgment as the final answer on an election in 2000, on elections in 2020, even if we still have questions, on issues ranging from gay marriage to abortion to capital punishment to gun ownership. And here's the key, okay? Here's the big key, is even when we disagree, or even when we think they're wrong, we still allow them the authority to make the decision. And he says, throughout all of human history, and especially across the world in terms of courts and the rule of law, this is an amazing accomplishment.
Now, these facts suggest that obedience to the court's decisions, respecting those decisions, even when they are wrong, has become close to habitual in this country. Americans have found it a normal attitude to take. Indeed, they find it normal to the point where they rarely realize that it is simply a custom, a habit. Just as the air around us, unnoticed, allows us to breathe, so this habit allows, in our country, the rule of law itself to flourish.
the rule of law, the notion that there is one set of laws and that the final arbiter of it is the justices of the Supreme Court, is something we take for granted, even when we disagree with their decisions. It would never occur to me, even though I might think a ruling is terrible, to say, and therefore we're not going to obey it. You have to be in a democracy, or a constitutional republic, it does not matter which word you use. You have to be willing to live with the consequences of what the court decides. And he says this is challenged by a variety of things, including a growing distrust of all government institutions. I agree with him about that. Media coverage of the court that has changed over the years from when they used to not even say which justices, but now they focus on which justices and which presidents nominated them, and even call it liberal or conservative, which is also, I know I do it, it's not really accurate. It's a shorthand version. But all of that undermines the authority of the court, making it seem like the court is a political institution ruling on the basis of personal view or the winds of the country or anything else, when it doesn't. The whole job, as we see through these nomination processes, confirmation processes, is that they read the law, study the law, and try to come to the right answer of what the law actually says. And again, the whole point is that we defer to them whether we think they're right or not. But that is a preciously fragile deference. And so, if you, and the court has over time had to work to earn it, the court has over time deliberately avoided controversies that it knows would jeopardize its trusted status. And that, you know why the court says no to cases a lot? They don't want to deal with it. Or it's not their thing to deal with. That's because they know it would jeopardize that precious, fragile authority that they have. So if you now start packing the court for political purposes, out of retaliation over the injustice you think you suffered with Merrick Garland, which I said at the time he should have gotten a hearing, but that doesn't solve anything now to change the number of justices on the court, here's what will happen. People won't listen to the court anymore. There is not a single thing that anybody could do that would undermine the authority of the Supreme Court in this country more effectively than to add justices. Because it would be perceived as no longer the Supreme Court. I think our Florida governor, he's a lawyer. If they do this, I can't guarantee, because you never know, but I can almost guarantee that we would start to have either a law passed or an executive order saying that we're going to decide when we obey the Supreme Court on the basis of which of the new justices rule which way, maybe at the light end of the spectrum or maybe just entirely. And they're not, and we're not the only state that would do this. He gives a scolding lecture for 2 hours about this topic, which is delivered in a very nice tone of voice with a lot of good historical examples, in which he basically says, do not do this.
What I'm trying to do is to make those whose initial instincts may favor important structural change or other similar institutional changes, such as forms of court packing, think long and hard before they embody those changes in law.
If you love the idea of three branches of government, if you love the Constitution, if you love the checks and balances system, and if you believe in the concept of the rule of law, this has to not happen. This is end of the Republic stuff. And you know me, I don't exaggerate like that, but that's where my brain is at. Is I'm like, this is how you get civil wars, is by doing stuff like this. I'm not advocating for it. I'm saying that's how people will interpret this. 748 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. As I said at the beginning of the segment, the one good news note is that at this point, Nancy Pelosi says she's not going to field that to the floor of the House. And, of course, we don't know yet what Biden's commission is going to come forward with. But that's thin security at this moment. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives. Some good news for you. We've been in the middle of some pretty unpleasant news all this week, generally speaking. I have good news for you. This is genuinely good news. You ready, Davis? The Blue Angels license plate's been final approved.
There you are.
You know, we've been doing this for like, what, 3 years. You know, the first one didn't go through, and then it went through, and then they started to raise the money, and then we paid. Where's the license plate? You know, I just talked to Scott Lunsford this morning, and he's a tax collector in Escambia County, and they got final design approval. It has to go through a bunch of check hoops. One of the final ones is it has to be approved by FHP, the Department of Highway and Department of Highway Safety Motor Vehicles, DHSMV, and it has been. So now they have ordered the materials from 3M, and then that goes over to the tag plant, and then they got 45 days after that to ship it to the tax collector's office. So mid-July, and it could be sooner. So you could see, fingers crossed, you could see Blue Angels license plates on cars before the beach show. Maybe even sooner than that. And by the way, the Blues are out of town this week. They're at their first show in,
the Sun and Fun.
Sun and Fun, that's Lakeland. Right. In Lakeland, that's right. First show of the year, so that's really cool. So yay! If you want to see the final design looks very much like the original design that we were looking at. There's a couple of little tweaks that got changed, like, you know, the text. The license plate numbers are a little bit different. Home of the Blue Angels was moved so that the horizon line of the surf doesn't interfere with visually reading it at a distance. There's a couple of, like, tiny little changes, but these plates are gorgeous. I cannot wait to get mine. And, of course, we've already had our challenge coins in for a couple of months now. So, anyway, good news. If you want to see it, it's up on our Facebook page. I'll post it here in about 2 seconds. Meanwhile, we've got Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
Good morning. Indianapolis police trying to make sense of a mass shooting at a FedEx facility last night that left 8 people dead. Levi Miller works there, tells the Today Show what he saw.
6 shots fired rapidly, and then I hear 10 shots. I see a hooded figure. I was unable to see his face in detail. However, the man did have an AR in his hand, and he started shouting, and then he started firing at random directions.
Has yet to be confirmed whether the shooter worked there, but Miller says co-workers have told him he was well-known there. Pfizer's CEO says people will likely need a third booster dose of COVID vaccine. Albert Bourla saying the third dose may have to be taken within 12 months of being fully vaccinated. Researchers in California believe at one time on Earth, there were 2.5 billion, with a B, Tyrannosaurus rexes roaming the planet.
I believe it's rexi.
Rexi? Tyrannosaurus rexi. Oh, I like that. A team at the University of California, Berkeley. Oh, well.
Sure it is.
They estimate about 20,000 adult T-Rexes existed at any one time, meaning one meat-eating dinosaur for every 38 square miles, kind of like your regular coffee shop.
Did you know I almost went to Berkeley? Can you imagine me at Berkeley?
Not now.
Yeah,
or not for
then,
long.
I would fit in just
I'm
fine.
Afraid you'd be canceled.
I was an original liberal way back in the day, right? But yeah, no.
They probably wouldn't let you on campus.
No. Keep that guy out. All right, Mark. Thanks for the update. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
All right. Well, congratulations to Charlie Collier. She was drafted number 1 overall in the WNBA draft out of the University of Texas. So a very cool moment. Her grandmother was adorable, by the way, in the video of them celebrating. She had this big blue hat on and broke out a dance that took social media by storm. So very cool. Also, basketball all-star LaMarcus Aldridge, after 15 years, abruptly calls it quits. He had sustained a what he calls irregular heartbeat, a life possibly life concerning situation. So he, out of an abundance of caution, says, I'm retiring from the game. He's not looking back. And also Michael Jordan will be presenting at the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame for Kobe Bryant, who is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And as we all know, about a year and a half ago, he passed away in that tragic helicopter crash, him and everyone else on board.
Good morning, 7:59 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Coming up next hour, we will have the late ceremony for the Transgressors Memorial Service, so you can tune in then and see who got canceled this week as we mourn the passing. Also, at 8:30, we're going to have a couple of good friends here in the studio, and we're going to talk with Greg Litton and Troy Moon about current events from the past week for the Wrap. Stick around for that.